From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump is once more at the center of what appears to be a blatant quid pro quo situation regarding the office of the president and his personal business affairs. Trump has reportedly considered easing up on sanctions aimed at a problematic Chinese phone manufacturer named ZTE as part of a potential U.S.-China trade deal. But his position on ZTE changed after a major Chinese development in an Indonesian project that Trump's personal business is involved in. My guest is Lori Wallach, director and founder of Global Trade Watch, a division of Public Citizen. She's an expert and activist on global trade issues. Welcome to the program, Lori.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, the backdrop for this whole issue is, of course, the trade war that Trump himself launched and started with China a couple of months ago. He started talking about it and then started ramping it up in a real way. China threatened to reply. And then he has decided to launch this trade deal with China to handle it. But all the while, he's talked about his warm personal relationship with President Xi Jinping. How do you explain Trump's position on China? Can it be seen as anything other than some sort of personal favor currying?
Well, with respect to a trade war with China, I think actually China's been in a trade war with the U.S. for some decades, which is to say the government in China has had a whole set of policies to keep wages low there, make sure there aren't independent unions, to subsidize a lot of the big companies that are actually owned by the government or the People's Liberation Army, the military. And we've seen in the U.S. literally millions of Americans across the country lose jobs to unfair trade. So when the administration first started to have some trade enforcement actions on China, it started out about trying to counter the different ways that these unfair trade practices were costing Americans jobs. And we have the world's largest of record historic coverage of trade deficits. We have the largest trade deficit with China, almost a half a trillion dollars. It's ginormous. So that's how this started. And think about what Trump said during the campaign, because this gets to the hypocrisy point. He promised that on day one, he would crack down on one of the ways that China's government has traditionally rigged the rules by lowering the value of the Chinese currency to effectively subsidize exports and make stuff sold from the U.S. to China too expensive to be sold in the market. Well, day two came around, and within short order, it was clear that wasn't happening. And then within months, the administration totally reversed on that promise to deal with the currency issue and dropped it. Then the administration said, well, we're not doing that, but we've got this other way of doing things. And that is where, number one, sanctions on companies like ZTE, which had violated U.S. law, they have over $1 billion in criminal sanctions for basically transferring technology to North Korea, to Iran. The technology transfer issue is those are fines U.S. companies have been hit with, Chinese companies, European companies. And then there was this trade enforcement action, which is technically called Section 301 of the trade law action. What's happened, Sonali, in the last week is so head-spinning that from going from we're going to take these strong actions, the president basically has caved on this enforcement action he launched and then shockingly stepped in to intervene in this criminal enforcement action, which isn't a place any president should be, to say to ZTE, we don't want to actually hurt the company.
In fact, he tweeted that China would lose a lot of jobs if they cracked down, if the U.S. cracked down on ZTE, and people wondered, why is the U.S. worried about Chinese jobs?
I'm sure that was quite the shocker for the workers in Michigan and Wisconsin and Ohio and Pennsylvania, who've been so furious about decades of corporate managed trade in the U.S., who decided to just go for, out of desperation, Trump for all of his pledges of fixing our trade problem. So many people who are Obama voters who voted for Trump on the trade issue. And then this, slap in the face, reversal, betrayal. But then, as you pointed out, to make it worse, it turns out that one of these Chinese government subsidized companies, it's literally owned by the government, had recently gotten involved in this Indonesian development that the Trump company is involved in building golf courses, et cetera, and to bail out this Indonesian real estate development that was in trouble. So there is no way to explain how possibly the president could have gone from one of his number one campaign promises that so really the only thing he's been consistent on for decades, way before he ran for president, was criticizing these trade problems. Suddenly he's going to back off on all of that. Funny coincidence that happens to be just when the Trump company is getting a lot of money towards a deal that they're involved in from the Chinese government.
So yes, so this Indonesian company named MNC, headed by this wealthy Indonesian financier, one-time political candidate, Hari, I can't pronounce his last name, it's a complicated last name, he got this loan from the Chinese government, and he's building this project, which will, I'm assuming, bear the Trump name, Lido City, this fantastical, waterfront development that was in trouble. And so Trump, of course, has probably going to claim that he has distance from his own business because, you know, he stepped back when he assumed the office of the presidency. But that's not really true, is it?
Well, the Trump sons are running the business. And there is in the history of the modern presidency, there has never been a situation where a president hasn't thoroughly divested and put their assets into a blind trust. So in this instance, you have the historical disaster of the president remaining entangled, despite his officially getting himself out of the official corporate structure. Of course, he talks to his kids who are running the place, and he's still getting the financial benefits of the place. So here you have this historic, vile entanglement, and then you have this not coincidence, I was being sarcastic, of the administration flipping on. I mean, you can't imagine the hours of effort that went into creating this trade enforcement action. There's a study that's like 800 pages of why this action, which was threatening trade sanctions, tariffs, unless the Chinese government changed some of these violations. This is separate from the ZTE, but the overall trade action. And then this weekend, instead of following through, we hear, well, the president thinks a great victory has been had because China's going to agree to buy some U.S. stuff. And a bunch of it is the same promises that have been recycled for presidency after presidency, but also the stuff that they're ostensibly going to agree to buy, it's just one time. We're going to buy some Boeing planes, or we're going to agree to have some U.S. LNG exports and buy some of that natural gas. It's not changing the structure of the trade system, the reforms that American workers and Chinese workers need to make sure that trade actually benefits working people, not just the big corporations. And it's particularly perverse because, ironically, at the same time, the renegotiations of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, totally unexpectedly, those are actually going in the right direction to get better for working people. In those NAFTA talks, actually, the administration has gotten rid of, is removing the big outsourcing incentives, the job outsourcing incentives. They've pushed the other countries to get rid of those outrageous investor state dispute settlements, panels or tribunals that empower corporations to demand unlimited sums of our taxpayers' money from tribunals of corporate attorneys when they can go attack any domestic policy they think undermines their NAFTA rights. All that stuff's going in the right direction. And then, boom, over the weekends, you have this incredible flip-flop that maybe this Chinese government money into this Indonesian resort where the whole thing isn't going to be Trump-branded, but his company is going to be running parts of it. Lido is a bigger project, and they have a chunk of it. But it's been in real trouble.
So, Laurie, you mentioned that China would be having, this sort of one-time purchase of Boeing products. Trump also tweeted, "Until under our potential deal with China, they will purchase from our great American farmers practically as much as our farmers can produce." That's it. I mean, it was just this very sort of cryptic, vague-sounding thing. Can you make sense of that?
Oh, yes, let me untangle that because that is perhaps the most cynical of the whole cynical corrupt thing. So, what happened is this process, that's Section 301 of the US trade law, allows for a study to be done to see if there are violations. If you can document the violations, then the US sends notice to the other country, says, hey, here are some things that you've agreed not to do, subsidizing your exports into the US so US workers get flattened for no reason of their own, or forcing US companies to transfer the technology that's developed here so the goods can be made there instead of here. All of those violations were found, and the US sends notice, please change this behavior. And if you don't agree to start doing so by X date, then we're going to hit you with trade sanctions to the amount that we have documented you're cheating. So that whole process is sort of going along. So China says, not so fast. We're going to counter sanction you. So they threatened tariffs, sanctions on US agricultural exports, existing exports that are already happening. Now, the thing about this kind of enforcement action is when the US has almost a $1 trillion trade deficit with China, the only upside of having China only buy $120 billion of our stuff, but us buying over $400 billion of their stuff, is we have a lot more sanction to threaten. Our stick is bigger. And so China is really reliant, the government, the elite, are very reliant on selling stuff here. So the US said $50 billion in sanctions, and China said, we raise you $15 billion back. And the US said, okay, $150 billion. And China said, ruh-roh, we don't have any more sanctions because we don't buy enough of your stuff. So we were at that moment where actually China was in a position, again, the trade deficit has been catastrophic for working people. I mean, millions of jobs lost. However, we were at that point where that trade deficit actually was translating into leverage to get the changes. And then this cave-in deal. Now, as you say, he said something about ag. What do you mean? Let me translate what this means. All he's talking about is the big gain is China agrees to remove the counter sanctions threatened to our sanctions, which is to say it's not buying more stuff. It's just agreeing to continue to buy and remove the sanctions that were in response to this enforcement action,
Wow.
which is a cynical, outrageous thing of all. And on top of that, by the way, some of our colleagues who actually can read Chinese have been following the press in China. What the Chinese government has done, and it's been reported in the official government-sanctioned publications, is ordered the different Chinese provinces to have their farmers grow more soy so that they're more independent. So while out of one side of the mouth, Trump is making it seem like we're going to get somehow more exports, when in fact all it is being able to sell what we're going to sell anyway. On the other side of the mouth, he knows that the Chinese government has sent out orders, because certainly if I can find it in the press, the State Department knows that the government is sending out orders to say, let's grow our own stuff, let's not buy American stuff. So it's super cynical.
So China is obviously pursuing a very China-centric smart policy that benefits China and China alone, which you would expect any country to do in their own interests. And Trump seems to be working in not the US's interests, but his own personal business interests. Would that
Well,
be
that's
fair?
what's so interesting. What's so interesting is, the Chinese policy is good for the Chinese elite, but obviously wages there are just horribly low. Workers who are working very hard, working very smart, who are the peer and equal to any US worker in a similar US company's plant, are being paid a dollar an hour, where US workers in a high-tech plant are being paid $15, $20, $30 an hour. There are no independent unions. If you go on strike in China, you get jailed. There is no free speech to advocate for better conditions for workers. There have been all these wildcat strikes and protests when the government seizes people's land, farmers' land, to make more factories. People get disappeared, get jailed. It's not a winning set of policies for people in China. Ostensibly, some of the demands that the U.S. has been making are demands that could help workers, certainly here, workers there. So for the administration to drop those while Trump is claiming Americans first is not even, I mean, if you want to think about it as U.S. versus China, which I don't, I think it is the multinationals versus working people all over the world. The current trade rules screw working people everywhere and benefit the big guys. But even if you wanted to see it as the U.S. versus China, right now it's Trump, Trump, and Trump versus everyone.
So is China playing Trump personally? Is the Chinese president playing Trump personally, as some people have suggested? I mean, it seems that when one knows what Trump is personally interested in, it's quite easy for a foreign entity, foreign government, foreign politician to manipulate this person. So that's one question, is China blatantly manipulating and bribing Trump? And the other question is, shouldn't this fall clearly into a violation of the Emoluments Clause?
I can't speak to whether they're manipulating Trump. I mean, certainly the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has launched a charm offensive on Trump under the theory you've just put forward that if you charm him, you can basically overcome his other positions. But with respect to NAFTA, U.S. negotiators really have stuck to, ironically, the agenda that unions and progressive groups like Public Citizen, progressive Democrats in Congress have been demanding for decades. I mean, it's not a shocker, right? Trump appropriated the fair trade agenda from progressives and Democrats. So if you want to fix an agreement for real, the things you're going to have to do are fairly limited. There are only certain terms that make the difference. You want to fix NAFTA and raise wages in North America and stop the loss of jobs to basically erase the bottom in wages, then those are the changes you have to make, the ones that progressives have been demanding. So in NAFTA, despite Justin Trudeau trying to charm the president into backing up, actually the U.S. demands are being fought by the Mexican and Canadian corporations, by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is on the warpath. And it's the unions and the Democrats in Congress who are basically saying, stick to your guns. So I don't know if it's just the Chinese charm offensive is working. I think it's more cynical than that. And that is really what is in Trump's personal financial interest. So he has also leading these negotiations, a guy who, the Treasury Secretary, Mnuchin, who came from Goldman Sachs. Mnuchin himself has a history of business dealings directly as a Goldman Sachs top guy with the Chinese government. And I think more than it's even charm or distraction or ideology, I do think it's this really slimy situation of maybe the government helping out his business interests are what has calmed him down with respect to following through on those promises. And the Emoluments Clause situation is, I think, a very real thing, which is, for folks who are not aware of what that is, it's a provision in the Constitution that explicitly says that presidents cannot accept benefits, gifts, gratuities from foreign governments. And it was put there by the founders under the notion that you don't want a king in another country basically trying to seduce the head of government in the new U.S. And there, it's a word not a lot of people know, because for all of the shady dealings of past presidents of various parties, there's never really been a situation where a president still has business dealings. It's hard to have an emoluments situation. I mean, you could say someone just gave me a beautiful gift and you could argue that's affected the policy decision they make. But there's no situation in the past where you have a president who has hundreds of billions of dollars of business leveraged with lots of loans being developed all over the world. I mean, imagine the announcement that happened when Trump decided he wouldn't disinvest. His spokesperson said there'll be no foreign business dealings the entire presidency. Well, poof, that was out the window. And this one with Indonesia is just the latest example. So here we have a president ostensibly representing the interest of the United States while he still is entangled with his business that's doing business all over the world.
We live in strange times, Laurie, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insight with us on these issues. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My guest has been Laurie Wallach, director and founder of Global Trade Watch, a division of Public Citizen. We've been discussing Trump's dealings with China and how it seems to be benefiting his personal business. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.